When I live in my memories, I have no time for the present. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. When I live in my memories, I have no time for the present. We've been teaching as an organization since 1975 the fact that first person present tense positive. We should live in the first person present tense positive. Think in that, work in that, do everything based upon the first person present tense positive. And little by little, it's taking flame around the world, and that's wonderful. I'm the only person who ever said that, of course, you know. You know that. Live in the first person present tense positive. Live in the now. Well, if you and I delight in our memories, and we do, we like to tell the stories of when we were kids or the first time we fell in love and our first house and our first car and subsequent cars to that and the adventures that we had and our first airplane ride and then our first flight where we were the pilot in command and things like that. Wow. What memories, what wonderful memories. Well, that's good. That's like aged wine. They say the older wine gets, the more mellow or whatever it gets. And but like with aged wine, when you drink it, it's gone. You may have had a good taste for it. If you drank the wine while you ate a meal, you didn't know what was happening. You didn't know the flavor, the bouquet of the wine. You had it along with the meal, and so perhaps the two complemented one another, which you really didn't know. You see, what we do when we live in memories, when we are constantly going back into memories, we're not living in the present. And this is what so many of us do. We don't live in the present. We want to say, well, that's the way it's been. That's the way we do things around here. That's the way the life goes around and so forth. And you say, well, that's understandable. You'd want to say that because you don't want to reinvent the wheel all the time. You want to have things move along somewhat smoothly. But perhaps we should reinvent the wheel. Perhaps we really should. Perhaps we should. In fact, they have a camp called Farther Stout, and they meet on an island in Connecticut, off the ocean there. And on the island, they have to forge for themselves. In fact, I think they had a series in the Smithsonian Magazine about three or four families who were each given a locale that they wanted, and then they were put into a very primitive circumstance in that locale. They had to build their own house. They had to take the kids along with that, what they had, just for the family the way it existed, and nothing but the primitive tools, and from their beautiful home to go out in the wilderness and establish a home in the wilderness. Establish a garden so they could have things to eat. Take from nature whatever they could. And live there for a period of time. I think it was 2 years. Now, you say, what did they eat while the food was being planted and getting ready to grow? That was a good point. I would like to mention, as extreme and outrageous as that adventure might sound to us if we had to do that, it was not the primitiveness of the woods where they found themselves or wherever they were put. It was not the temperature that bothered them, you know, hot, cold, whatever. It was not the lack of television, the lack of radio, the lack of newspapers and magazines and the lack of anything. It was a special gift that was given to them. They reinvented it. And the special gift was meeting one another, of finding out who they were, of having time to listen to the divine within them. Really, it's quite surprising. Everyone thought surely it would be the ruggedness of it, but, and this was not a negative thing, but they found the divine within themselves. They found time to delight in the little things in life. The man found time to take his children along with him. Did you see this? Do you see how it grows? Now see how these things happen here? You know, letting the children wake up to nature, wake up to life all about them, doing its normal thing. And the wife was washing in a tub and hanging him out in the line. And the children said, "Can I help? Can I help?" And she said, "Sure." She says, "You never asked at home." Of course, she really didn't say that more than once. But they said, "Of course not. You got the washing machine. You got the dryer. There's nothing for me to do, you know." But this is nice. I remember when we were kids, we had a line on the back in the backyard for hanging up the wet laundry, you know. And mother would say, "Go hang it up out there, you know." And we'd take the clothespins and put it on there. And then later in the day, mother would say, "Go bring it in now." And she'd say, "Don't fold it. Just bring it in." Because it was frozen solid on the line. And the sheets were standing stiff as boards. And if you fold them, of course, you break them. But, you know, you see, these are things. I talk about memory, but I'm talking about living in the now, experiencing the now. We relive it in our memory, but have our children, have our young people ever had the opportunity to be close to nature, to see what nature really does? I mean, how many children today would think of having a sheet hanging on the line and be froze solid like a board? It would be beyond their imagination because it's not something they experience. The coldness is there, sheets are there, and what have you, but washers and dryers and laundries and stuff take care of these things. Well, you see, when I live in memories, I have no time to live in the present. And a father who will sit down in the evening and talk to his children and tell them about when he was a little boy and the things he did, that's nothing. That's nothing. It's seen through the father's eyes. And you say, "Oh, how lovely. Isn't that beautiful that he shares with them?" Better than a kick in the head, I guess. But wouldn't it be wonderful if that same father would take his children out to the wilderness, out to some camps farthest out or something, and let them experience nature as it is experienced, as they'd sit down and they might watch a flower as it's opening. As the sun comes out, the flower opens and the moisture falls away from the petals and so forth. And or as they sit by the brook, and they watch the fish swimming in the brook, and they're so quiet. They don't want to catch them. They don't need to catch them. They're just sitting there watching them. And they'll swim over here, and they'll swim over there, and the current's coming so strong, and they swim against the current, or they get in the eddies of the current where they can sit quietly and eat and so forth. Whoever sees that, whoever sees that. Even when you're out fishing with your fishing rods and stuff, you don't see that. You might see a little bit of it, but you've always got that rod going, that fly casting or whatever you're doing, and you're not in the stillness. But you see, that's creating memories for yourself. That's not talking about them, but that's living them in the now. And we want to have time for the present because there are wonderful things going on right now in the present. As illustrated, if a father were to sit down with his children in the middle of the living room, and he'd say, "Okay, now, we're going to have a contest. We're going to see who can count the most strands on the carpet And we're going to start here now. This is your place here where you put a piece of tape here, piece of tape here, and you count how many are in there. Now here's yours and here's your. You each have 1 foot. Now let's see what you can count. And because this is crazy. Yeah. Go for it. And so some of the kids will be counting, as kids do, 10, 300, 4, 97, you know, with all the interesting numbers. And others will be 1, 2, 3. Shut up! You're making me lose my place, you know. But they'd be having fun. Now, who would ever do something like that? You know, only an idiot. Or someone who wanted the family to be together. So the older boys were looking down at the little girl, and she's having such a tough time. And so they just put their counting aside, and they work with her on her counting. And they say, now, this is how you do it. See, that's right. And loving, gentle, caring, living in the present. Not talking about memories, but living in the present, doing things in the present. And for instance, this is normal, of course, but the mother says, now, come on, let's surprise your daddy when he comes home. Let's have his slippers by his chair, and he doesn't smoke a pipe anymore, so we can't have that there. And we don't want him to drink whiskey. We don't have that there. We don't want him to drink beer. We don't have that there. We have a glass of water next to his chair, and so forth. And so dad comes in the door. Well, how's everybody, you know? And takes off his coat and hangs it up and goes to his chair, and there's his slippers. And the kids say, let me take your shoes, Dad, you know. And they all fight over who's going to get the shoes to take them off. And so he sits down. He says, a glass of water. How wonderful. It's just like today, as I was talking to Faith on the phone, she said she had a lot of little problems and that they were all ironing themselves out nicely. But then she met a neighbor. And the neighbor said, a bunch come over and visit now, you know. And so Faith went over to visit, and they had a nice chat. And Faith was saying she has her walker, and she has a wheelchair, but she doesn't like to use a wheelchair, and that she's an older lady, and she's just, you know, doing just fine, and that she has this family and that. And Faith just sat there, and she told me about it. And I said, Faith, are you going to go back? I know she's invited you. Yes, she did. Well, why wouldn't you go back? Well, she's an old lady, you know. And I said, and you? You're a young lady. She says, yeah. And I said, wouldn't it be nice for the old lady to have a young lady come visit her? Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way, you know. But think of it that way. Think of it that way. And then, you know, Faith, you go on your walks every day. And you could stop by the flower store and pick up one or two little flowers for, you know, 50 cents or something. Drink one less cup of coffee or whatever you're drinking there. And take it to that lady. Because she made an overture of friendship to you and invited you to come into her house and to be in her world, and just say a little thank you of a flower. And you see, these little things, they should be natural for us. It should be natural that we do that. But we're living so in the past. We're living in the past where we didn't bring a couple of little posies. We brought a big potted plant, you know, something that costs $30. And you can't do things unless it's going to cost a lot of money. And yet, it's those little things that don't cost a heck of a lot that make the big difference. I told you we visited Irene's mother, and as we were getting ready to go in her house, she lives in a group housing of elderly people, and I noticed there's a bunch of roses growing along the path there. So I reached down, picked out one particularly nice one, and I brought it in the house, and I presented it to her. I said, this is from you, for you. She said, you stole that from in front of my house. I said, yes, I did. But I stole it for you. And she's, boom, you know. And then Irene says, Mom, where have you got a vase? She says, I'll get it. It's under the sink, you know. Well, she never did get it. Because we get too involved in talking and doing other things. But she wanted to be gruff, you know. She wanted to be tough and stuff like that. But she didn't realize she didn't have to. She didn't have to do that. But she felt always that she had to do that. And primarily because of one little thing that Irene forgets and everybody else forgets. She raised the family pretty much by herself. There was no man there. I don't know what happened to her husband. He died or something, you know, early on in the marriage. And she never married again, and she had to take care of the kids all by herself. And so she had to be the mama and the papa, and she had to be tough, and she had to be strong and go through whatever things she had to go through by herself. And the toughness just never went away. It just stayed. And so that's a time when we have to live in the present and not remember the past, not remember why it is or why it's not. There's no reason for it to be now. Whatever reason there was for it to be then, there's no reason for it to be now. And so we begin to help mend that bridge, to make the bridge of love and caring rather than a bridge of hell and swearing, you know? Because that can be very tough. That can be very tough. I talked with our prisoner at Calipatria yesterday, and he was describing to me his new cellie. And he was saying that his new cellie is a tough guy. He's just into all sorts of nonsense, and he was on medical, and he takes his medical drugs and he sells them to get other things, you know, to get canteen because he doesn't have any money. He doesn't have any family. He has nothing. Whatever he did alienated him from his world. And so now he has nothing. And yet he has everything because he knows how to manipulate. And J.G. said, well, you know, I don't need that. He says, I live comfortably on a minimum. I sell my paintings, and I have enough to get along with to do the things I need to do. He says, I haven't made things be a demand on me. And I said, well, you're living in the present. You're living in the present. You're living in the now. You're not living in your dream world of, I remember when I, you know, could afford this and could afford that. Well, that's good. At the moment, you have a different thing. At the moment, you're living in the wilderness. And you have to raise your corn and your potatoes. You have to go out and get your deer. Mm-hmm. And it's just like our friend in the Bushman down in Africa. He was hungry, so he shot an animal, thinking that that was perfectly okay. But it was an animal from somebody else's herd in the civilized area, not in the Kalahari backcountry. And so he had a lesson to learn. And he learned the lesson, and his friends were saying he wouldn't survive if he had to be locked up for 2 weeks. Well, now, what would you say about something like that? You would say they would have a hard time surviving locked up for 2 weeks. But this guy, what do you think happens on a hot day in the Kalahari? You think they're out running around? No, they are finding their shade or finding something where they can relax. And they just hibernate, so to speak, and they don't feel the heat. They're like animals that walk around on the desert floor, like little birds and so forth, whose blood vessels are on the bottoms of their feet as well as their whole feet, and they don't feel that heat. They don't get burned. They're acclimated. But they're acclimated to living in the present. They're not saying what their genes were and what their chromosomes are and things of the past. They're living in the present, and they're just having a wonderful time. When I live in my memories, I have no time for the present. So I suggest that we all live in the present and have no time for memories. I mentioned a few today just as an illustration in passing, but let's live in the present and have the most enjoyable life that the world could ever offer to anybody. Because we're worth it, you know that? We really are. I love you. I love you. I love you.